You're listening to Beyond the Jargon, a jargon-free look at graduate students and their research journey here at UVic. I'm Colleen, and I'll be your host today.
I'm so excited today to have as my guest Kate Markham, who is a master's student in anthropology. Welcome, Kate.
Hi, thank you.
And I'm going to let Kate tell us what her specific interest is, and then we're going to back away from that. I'm going to find out a little bit about how she got here, and then we're going to kind of circle back around to what she's doing, because it's fascinating to me what she's studying and where we are and how that came to be. So, Kate, tell us what your specific interest is.
Well, I study primatology, actually. So I study primates, monkeys, apes, gorillas, lemurs. All of those are primates.
Excellent. And
I just completed my first year as a master's student in anthropology. My focus, my research interest, is really on feeding ecology and why primates eat what they eat, how it affects their social life, how it affects their brain, how it influences them. I'm really interested in food.
Okay, interesting. Okay, so it's really, really specific interest. And a lot of times when people enter a master's, they have a little more general interest and they're trying, but you're coming in with what seems pretty specific. So, all right, that's what makes me interested in the fact that for those of you listening who might not be aware that we are actually on an island in the Pacific Northwest, I'm curious as to where you came from, and I guess I just did not think of Pacific Northwest as a place where people studied monkeys. So, which doesn't mean you can't, but I just was caught by surprise. So if you could let me know where you came from here. And
well, I did my undergraduate degree at George Washington University in Washington, D.C. They do have primates there. There's a zoo, so they have captive primates.
Yes.
But because I do feeding ecology, I am more interested in wild studies, so studies that actually take place where primates naturally live. And in a lot of those cases, you work with an advisor who does live in the States or Canada or Europe or even Australia. There are some primatologists in Australia. And then you go and you travel to Africa or South America or wherever during the summer or during your field season, and that's how you study primates in a place where there are no primates.
Okay, interesting. Okay, so you are originally from where?
Massachusetts.
Okay, so you are a long way from home. You're from
yes.
the other side of the continent.
Yes.
And were you from a big town? I mean, well, were you around Boston or?
I'm about an hour from Boston, or I guess, an hour from Boston. So I would say not a tiny town, but definitely not a big town.
Because moving up, deciding to go to Georgetown University, D.C.
Don't give me too much credit.
Yeah, that's a big city. So what did you find when, you know, what were the, like, you've traveled from, you're from very trees, beautiful Massachusetts, and now you're in, I mean, Maryland is beautiful, but it's also, there's a lot of congestion. It's a big city.
Yeah.
What did you think of that?
I loved it. I really loved doing my undergraduate degree in a city because it was so accessible. You could get to the museums really easily. You could get to the zoo really easily. You just had everything at your fingertips, and it was really nice. It was very convenient. That's not to say I didn't miss the trees. I most definitely,
yes.
definitely
did. Because it's so beautiful. I used to live out near the New England area, and it's definitely gorgeous out there.
Yeah,
trees.
Yeah.
But I didn't see any monkeys.
No,
so when you were, did the monkey thing happen when you were a kid, or did it happen when you got to D.C.?
It happened when I was in D.C.
Okay.
I was one of those students that really had no idea what I wanted to do. I knew that I wanted to graduate with my bachelor's and be able to use it. I knew that I didn't want to just, get a degree in liberal arts and figure it out later. So I changed my major 10,000 times, and at one point I needed...
Which is so good for people to hear, because
it is. It's...
You feel like you're the only one, and you find out that's usually what most people do.
Yeah, for sure. I highly recommend it. If you don't like what you're doing, life is short. Try something else.
And actually, I admire it, because if you think about it, if you enter a program, let's say you go right from high school and you have the opportunity to go to college right away, you're around 18 years old, and if you know exactly in your heart of hearts the one thing that you want to do, you know, that good for you, and that's great.
Yeah,
but if you try something at 18 and feel that you now have to do it, part of going to university is that you're exposed to things you've never been exposed to before.
Very
so
true.
My hope would be that it would expand your imagination.
Very true.
And now you've got new ideas on what you could do.
Yes.
So, okay, so now you're in your program, and what was the moment that you said, all right, monkeys are it?
I needed to fill a class, I needed to take a science class, and I took Introduction to Biological Anthropology and absolutely loved it, but that was everything about humans. That was, you know, human variation, primates, fossils, all that jazz. And so I switched my major to bioanth, and then I kind of took, you know, I took some human classes and I took some primate classes, and it was Introduction to Primatology, and I soaked up every word. I love doing the reading. I love doing the homework, and it just came really easily to me.
So it just clicked.
I found it so interesting that it wasn't a hassle to study per se or to memorize. Like it was fun for me. It was not work, and that's when I knew, okay, this is it. I could do this for the rest of my life. Easily.
See, I love that. I love the idea that it was so not planned for you to find what you click with, and you took it in what was just some sort of, oh, I have to take a course kind of thing, and all of a sudden, oh, see, that's brilliant. Okay, so now you've decided this, and you've finished your degree. Now, you are currently quite a long ways away from Washington, D.C. What made you make the choice to come out here?
Well, when you do any sort of graduate work, you don't necessarily look for a school. You look for who your advisor is going to be.
Mm.
And I found Lisa Gould, and she works with lemurs in Madagascar. She's done it for ages now, possibly longer than I've been alive. No, maybe not. But she's done it for a very long time, and she's really good at it. And she is also interested in feeding ecology. So our interest clicked really well. I heard good things about her from other people, which is always important.
Yes.
And I figured, you know, why, I'm young, I'm not married, I don't have anything tying me down to one place. I've never been to the West Coast. So
I know, I was the same way. I'm like,
yeah.
It was to the point where you say, you know, why not?
Exactly. Why not? It's like, you know what? I'm going to go. It's going to be something new. It's going to be different. And
oh, great.
Here I am.
Okay, so, and how long have you been here?
I have been here just under a year. I came at the end of August last year.
Okay, so you've had a chance to experience the total different type of seasons you're used to, which is really interesting. I mean, they're all beautiful in their own way, but it's just, it was so interesting to me that I hadn't been in a place through an entire year that had more like two seasons instead of four really volatile, distinct ones. And so that was kind of interesting to me. But I liked it, but it was just a shift. I found myself often not knowing what month it was.
Oh, I know. It's just kind of rainy for a really long time. It's been, I have to say, it's different because for me, yes, I go to the jungle and I've definitely had tons of rain, but here it's a cold rain. And
yeah.
So it's, I'm not really a fan, not going to lie. I haven't gotten used to it yet, that's for sure. I just get really cold with the dampness.
You have to, and they're always telling you, we layer, layer.
Yes.
You need to layer here. Yeah. And it's so true. I've now gotten used to the layering. It makes all the difference in the world, but it's great.
I think I figured that out towards like the very end of the rainy season. I finally started getting better at it, where I was like, all right, just put 10 million things on and grab an umbrella and you're good.
But I will say it is kind of nice to not have like 6 months worth of, you know, really long winters where you've had to wear a full down coat, and I mean, you can't step outside without completely bundling. So I mean, I love snow, but you also like it to be over, and sometimes it takes a long time.
It's very true.
Anyways, okay, so now you're in your current studies. You've been here for a year, and this is about the time in a master's where people start doing less in classroom coursework and more out in the field work. Is that the case for you?
It is the case for me. I'm done all my courses, which is super exciting because now I just get to focus on the research part of it, which is really why we're all here. And I will be going to Madagascar and collecting my data because, like you said, there's no primates here, nothing for me to study, at the end of the summer. So I'll I'll be heading to Madagascar basically the last couple of days of July.
Okay.
There for 3 months to collect data.
Okay, it seems like every place you're going now is you keep expanding how far you're going to go. And so now we're going around halfway around the world now. What's happening in Madagascar? Why would you go to Madagascar?
Madagascar is super interesting, at least in my opinion, because it's so diverse. It's a very, very large island. We don't really think of it, but it is quite large. It's larger than Vancouver Island. And it has a lot of diverse habitats. It has really wet areas and really dry areas. It's coastal. It's an island. There's the coast. There's also mountains. So it's very unique. But you have these primate species that live in multiple areas, multiple little habitats, per se. And I find that very interesting because, obviously, where you are, if you're a primate, is going to affect what you eat.
Right.
So.
All right. Now, what will you find there? What does one find in Madagascar as far as the classification of monkeys? And could you also explain the correct definition of monkeys? Because I know like I said, everything gets classified as a monkey because I think of a stuffed animal, not
right.
on what's truly a monkey versus what's an ape or...
Okay. Well, the easiest way to distinguish ape and monkey is apes are gorillas, chimps, orangutans, and gibbons. And none of those have a tail.
Okay.
And generally
no
bigger.
Tails means you're an ape.
Yep.
Okay.
Generally speaking. And then pretty much what you think of as a monkey, if it has a tail, it probably is a monkey, with the exception of this group of, they're called pre-monkeys, really.
Pre-monkeys.
They evolved earlier, and those include the lemurs of Madagascar. And that's what's interesting about Madagascar, is because lemurs are only found on this island. Nowhere, they're not in Africa, they're not anywhere else in the world. And
so the lemur is thought of as a monkey, but in technically speaking, it's a pre-monkey.
Technically it is not a monkey, correct?
Okay, but interesting. But it's good to use, because no one would understand it if
right.
you just threw out, they'd be like, what are you talking about?
No, people know lemurs, so I can say
yeah,
that I study
yeah.
lemurs, but they're either considered a prosimian or a strepsirrhine, and they're not technically a monkey, but it's okay. I understand it's a confusing topic, so.
Well, yeah, it is, because the reason I would say, for me, it's confusing is because of the image that is presented in the movies, TVs, and especially for children.
Right.
And then you hear, so you've got that innocence image, this playful, we connect with them in a way, but usually it's presented that they're doing something very human, even
yes.
dressed like humans.
Yes.
And then you get, as an adult, you're aware of these, you'll hear some horror story, news story of somebody who's kept something in their house and it's eaten their face, and then you're like, I don't know what to think, what's real, what's not, what's sensationalized. What are your thoughts on that when you're looking at a lemur? You know, you're not going to be hanging out with humans all the time. You really are observing just the animals themselves.
Right.
So
primates are adorable. They're definitely cute. I think they're adorable. I have no problem with that, with people thinking that. But what I think a lot of people, or some people rather, tend to forget is that they are wild. They have social systems. They have needs. They have activities they do during the day. They run, they jump, they groom each other. They're not a domestic cat. They're not a domestic dog. They, especially apes, apes are very, very intelligent. They're going to get bored easily. They need to be in groups, and they're incredibly strong. So you have these primates that there's kind of two sides of it. On the one hand, they can be dangerous, and no, you should not have them as a pet. But on the other hand, they're not, all that aggressive behavior and all that negative attention they receive those are always instances where something is off, where the primate's out of his environment, or
they were put in a no-win scenario based
exactly.
on what they are
and so
as
then
an
they
animal.
Look, then they look terrifying and evil. And
it's
funny because everybody asks me, "Oh, what do you think is like the kindest primate?" And I always say a gorilla because it's true. I worked with them at the National Zoo in D.C. and they're just the sweetest, nicest animals.
Oh my gosh! And they're so huge.
I know, and they're huge, and people are always shocked because of King Kong and all that jazz, and they just get sensationalized in a way that isn't accurate. And you have to realize that all these primates, they have, you know, they are evolved for a habitat in the wild. They're evolved for a social system. They have personalities like us. They, they have moods potentially, especially if we're talking higher primates. And it's a bit of a middle ground needs to be reached. No, you definitely should not be having them as a pet, but you also don't, how to put it? You should respect that they are, yes, cute, but also
wild
and interesting animals.
Well, and they're not meant to be human.
Right, exactly. Very, very, very true.
They're not. Which is, even though one can dress them up as human, they're not human, or else they would be human.
Right, exactly.
Kind of thing. So it's really interesting to me. And so it makes me wonder, well, a couple of things. I do want to talk about when you say you worked with the animals. In what capacity did you work with animals before? Because it sounds like, oh, when you're studying in school, you're studying all in books when you're doing a bachelor's degree, an undergraduate degree.
Right.
But it sounds like was this extra work on top of school?
Once I got into primates, like I said, I knew that I loved it and I wanted to spend the rest of my life doing this. So I found someone in my department who worked at the National Zoo in D.C., because that was one of the great things about being at George Washington, was that you are in D.C. and there's the Smithsonian and whatnot. So there were a lot of opportunities as a student. And I volunteered at the zoo and worked as like a research internship assistant for about a year and a half. And it was great because on the one hand, you know, you spend a very large portion of your days there cleaning their cages and just, you know, maintenance type things. But you also do get to watch research being done with them. You get to observe them and see their behaviors with enrichment items. And it was an incredible experience. I was so happy there and I really loved it.
Were you able to get any sort of credit for that, college credit?
No, I did not receive any college credit, but it was one of those things that looked really good on my resume.
Yes, nice.
I grew a lot as a person, and I learned a lot about what I wanted, what I didn't want for my future. So I realized there that I didn't actually want to work with captive animals, even though there are benefits to it for sure. I realized, okay, I think I would rather be observing in the wild, if that's possible.
Did you have a moment where you were able to truly connect with one of the gorillas?
I wouldn't say there was one moment where I felt a super connection or anything like that, but there were a whole lot of little moments where, you know, it would just be little things where, for example, the zookeeper would say, okay, to one of the animals, you know, go get this piece of hay that's preventing the door from being closed, the cage door. And, you know, the gorilla would go do it. And you're amazed at how well they understand us and how...
Interesting.
No, they definitely... They understand body language and whatnot, and they're just very smart. And so it was a lot of little moments like that where I would just be amazed at how... I would say how human they are, but in reality, maybe it's more that we're not as...
unique.
Special, yeah. I mean, they're very bright animals, and they're...
And we have a connection.
Yeah, for sure. I definitely would say so. I would definitely say we have a connection. One that needs to be maintained from a distance.
Right.
It's really amazing how similar we are.
Well, it sounds to me, it's to go into the field that you're going into, there are things involved that it's more than just a love of a particular animal. You seem to have an ability to be able to stand back and observe.
Yes.
Because there is not only a social aspect to the animals that you are looking at, but there's a incredible social distinction in your job description from other types of jobs. And so that if someone could say, oh yes, of course I want to, you know, they saw a documentary on apes that was an hour long and showed you all these wonderful things that people found and observed, and well, what they don't show you in that hour interview is the 4,000 hours of tape somebody went through to edit to get it to an hour, and the years. And so that they're... When did you notice that was... I mean, that seems to be... That has to be a skill requirement. Does that make sense, what I'm getting at? Because I don't think everybody could do that.
It's, I think, a lot of people, and not just, I mean, the general population, but even anthropology students, students who think they're going to study primates, they don't realize how much of it is, to be frank, boring. I mean, they're not always grooming each other. They're not always doing something super cute. It's a lot of the time they are spending just resting. Yes. And you are standing there and you are watching them and you can't go do whatever you want to do because you need to have an accurate count of their day. So it can be very boring for some people. And I think I first realized that when I did my first field school. It was in Costa Rica and I was studying howler monkeys, and they are...
Now, is this a true monkey, not a pre-monkey?
Okay,
see, all right, I'm connecting with this description now.
They just eat leaves, they live in groups, they're about the size of maybe a house cat, a large house cat.
Okay.
And they spend a lot of time sleeping. And so you're standing on your feet for hours of the day just watching them sleep. And, you know, maybe they'll roll over or maybe they'll scratch an itch, but it's not... always interesting. Yes, there are interesting parts for sure.
Especially when you put all the data together, look back and analyze the forest through the trees,
right,
kind of thing. Well, it makes me wonder, too, that you just said standing there. You know, where are you standing? Not to sound totally ignorant,
but it's not like you can
just stand there. And because when does that crisscross into that phenomenon where you're not really observing them in the true wild because you're there?
It's true, yeah.
I mean, what is there? Is there some sort of prescribed distance you need to maintain, or how does that work?
It depends on the primate that you're studying. With arboreal primates, so howlers are really high up in the trees, it's not necessarily a distance you have to stay away from them. But the real indication is every group of primates that's studied goes through what's called a habituation process. And what that is, it can take years. It takes years for gorillas, for example, or it could take a few weeks if it's a different animal. It depends
and
on
what
a
is
lot
that?
Of things. It's the process where you don't record any data. You're not taking down data about their behavior or whatnot. You're just getting them used to you.
Interesting.
So you just go out, you find them. You don't chase them down, but you just... You know, you stand far away, they know you're there. Maybe the next day you get a little bit closer. If they run from you, you don't follow them. And it takes a lot of patience. The time that you spend doing it can really vary. It depends on whether or not these animals have been hunted before or if they've seen humans before.
Oh, wow, right. Of course, that makes sense now that you're saying it. But you don't think about it. You just think, oh, I'm just going to go out there. Well,
right.
It makes me think of... You know, we all like to just go, okay, let's get away from my desk and go grab some lunch.
Right.
I would presume you're not supposed to be bringing food on this. Like, if you're going to eat and stuff, you do it back at a camp. You don't do it there. I mean, how does that work?
Well,
can you...
You bring food. You definitely bring food because the hours are so long. You get up.
Don't they smell it? Because it's going to be different food from... I guess I'm really thinking now of this idea of... Your smell's different than the smells in there. Do you have to put some sort of scent on you? All of a sudden, my mind's reeling with, wow, how do you disguise yourself? How does that work?
No, see, that's all part of the habituation process. So we would say an animal is habituated, or a group is habituated, once they pretend that we're not there. They're so used to us. They're used to seeing us every day. They know what we look like. They don't alarm call. They don't shake the trees. They don't do anything. They just keep... feeding if they were feeding, or sleeping if they were sleeping, or whatnot, and they don't react to you. It doesn't matter if you're wearing different clothes, or
if you move and you
right,
step on a
exactly.
twig,
they
they're not alarmed.
Right.
Okay.
So
interesting.
It takes a while, but then that said, because to find primates, once you found them, whenever that happens, whether it's the middle of the day or the end of the day, you're going to follow those primates, that group, until they go to sleep, till they make nests or they pick their sleeping tree, and then you leave and you go back to camp. But then the next morning you get up before the sun is even up, you go back to that tree before those primates have woken up, so that you're there for when they do wake up. And that's how we know where they are.
That's like a really intense immersion.
Oh,
this
yeah.
is not some simple little let's
no,
go out for
no.
a couple hours.
No, it's usually not. I mean, if you're lucky enough to have a site where they're radio collared, perhaps, but that's pretty expensive and pretty rare from what I've heard, especially because it's such an intensive process to put the radio collars on them. But otherwise, the vast majority of us get up really early, bring food, bring water, bring tons of insect repellent.
Oh, I was going to ask about that because I like have this thing, mosquitoes like love me and I'm like totally allergic. And I was just going to ask you, what's the bug life in like in Madagascar? I mean, maybe can you fill us in what Madagascar, where this place is you're going? What's, have you had any exposure to it whatsoever? Have you been prepared with how different it's going to be?
That's a good question. In terms of shots and whatnot, I'm actually up to date. But in
fabulous,
terms
good.
Of what bugs are there, I haven't looked it up because I kind of don't want to know.
ignorance is bliss.
No, it's definitely
ignorance is bliss.
But I think I actually luck out a little bit because part of where I'm working is a drier area, so there are fewer bugs. But you bring a lot of bug spray, you bring a mosquito net for your bed, you wear long sleeves and long pants so that you're not getting bitten, things aren't crawling up you type of deal.
So you've had certain exposure to this. This isn't your complete first time out in the wild.
No.
Okay.
No, you learn a lot of things from field school. Like I know now to always bring, they're so funny looking, but those mosquito hats where it's a hat, but the mosquito net is attached to it.
Oh, no, I think those things are awesome.
Oh,
I'm all about avoiding the mosquito.
Yeah, exactly. So those, you always want to bring one just in case, even though.
Are you excited about this? Are you nervous? Can you, I mean, as it's getting closer?
I'm both. I'm incredibly excited because I've never been to Madagascar, so it's going to be amazing. I'm also nervous, though. I'm a little nervous about the bugs, not going to lie. I'm nervous about actually collecting data because I only have 3 months and it's a 90-day tourist visa. So from when I land to when I leave is 90 days and that's all I've got.
So you want to do it, make the most of it.
Exactly. And I'm a little worried about that, to be honest.
Can I ask something and not, I'm trying not to make you scared, but I like have such great respect for nature. I just make sure I give it distance. Like I know that a raccoon can take you out,
yes.
Right? So I'm thinking you're going to a jungle and where there are lemurs and there are plants that, I wouldn't be familiar with. I wouldn't know what to touch, what not to touch. Are there bigger animals? Is that a worry?
Well, in Madagascar, it's actually a really sad story.
Because they've been eliminated?
Arrived, yeah,
exactly. Oh, that is a sad story.
Humans arrived, and there's really nothing big on that island. So in terms of me getting eaten by a cat, no. There aren't any. We've killed them all, unfortunately.
Not that you would be its natural prey, but, there's always
right.
the instances
right,
if you
sure,
scare something or make it feel threatened or
exactly.
whatever. Yeah.
No, I mean, that's definitely a concern in other areas, but not...
Oh, that is a sad... I mean,
here.
It's. I'm glad to hear that it'll be safer,
right,
but it's a sad reason. I don't know how to feel about that now. Sorry. I'm almost sorry I brought it up, but I think I need to include it on the interview because that's a really interesting point.
There used to be a whole bunch of lemurs on Madagascar, but none of the bigger ones are alive anymore. And it's funny, when you find them, when you find these remnants, they're not even fossils because not enough time has gone by.
It's that recent.
Bones, right, and it's... I mean, it's humans. It's that they were hunted. They were food. They were yummy.
Interesting. Okay, so I could also see where this could lead to further research down the road, but also a path. You never know. You clearly have passion, so I could see where animal advocacy could come into play at some point.
I think if anybody who's working in the field, whether you're doing biology or primatology or whatever, at least... I mean, I guess maybe not in all habitats, but I think everyone has to be an advocate as well. I think you have to include conservation in your work. It's just not, we're not at a place anymore or a time where we cannot be advocates. Even if, I mean, I don't plan to go into conservation as a career necessarily.
Right.
But I want to.
But there's
research.
An awareness there.
Oh, right. But
yeah.
Exactly. I think everyone has to at least do something. They have to do... Whether it's educating people who are people in Canada, people in the United States, or it's educating people within those countries, or it's,
we've evolved. I believe we have evolved to that
right.
point. I don't want to sit and blame. I don't like to sit and blame. I try to think of I really do believe most people are doing the best they can do.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
With the best that they know how at any time. And I think we've gotten to this point where we can see through our different technologies where impact and in exchange in relationships between animals and humans and plants and humans we can create a greater awareness of that. It isn't just purely about how do I survive now to the next day? And so I think that's a really good thing. And so, we're always evolving. And I think
Playing the blame game doesn't help anybody. I think it's just a matter of making everyone aware and everyone.
We didn't realize this was going to happen, but now now we know. Exactly. So let's do something different.
Yep.
Well, Kate, I am so thrilled. I am a little scared. I could not do what you're doing, but I commend you for doing what you're doing, and I'm hoping that you'll want to come back and when you're done and let us know what you found.
I will tell you all about bugs and
I'm certainly you're going to be having some pictures and all of that good stuff.
Yes.
And well, and congratulations on this next adventure. Thank you so much for coming today.
Thanks for having me, Colleen.
Again, thank you for listening to Beyond the Jargon on CFUV.